Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart Talk with Miss E. This evening has been quite a challenge, even as we speak. So for those of you who are holding on and have been holding on, we thank you and appreciate your patience. And I think this is probably one of those opportunities to learn from the moment in regards to the topic we're speaking of this evening. I am challenged with being able to log into our studio component online to bring our guests in. And as a matter of fact, I wasn't able to get in myself until I had to go get my cell phone to get my code to log in, which I can usually do from the computer screen. So I believe that one of our guests is actually holding on until I can bring him in. And tonight's topic is entitled Sorting Through the Maze of Adoption, Fairy Tale or Horror Story. And at this moment, I'm sorting through the maze of Blog Talk Radio. It's definitely not a fairy tale, and it's not going to be a horror story. It's going to be just the way we need it to be. So if I could even cue in a song for you to listen to while I'm trying to tackle this. I'm not sure what's going on. It said I was logged in, and then it said I wasn't, and it would not allow me to go into the studio. So I am just going to keep going here, and this is very much analogous to what I'm talking about. Wow. I just read a note from the guest who was holding on. We started off with three guests this evening. Our first guest, attorney Michelle Hughes, found out that she had double booked, and so she is attending she's on a panel in Chicago, Illinois, and she was going to try to pop out to do this call. And I told her, oh, no, don't worry about it. Don't stress yourself. I've learned my lesson about trying to be in two places at one. You know, ain't nobody got time for that. So I told her just to follow her heart. We will reschedule her. So I still got my two other guests on. Then about 2 hours ago, I received a call from Mr. Wagner, who stated that there's some technical difficulties on his end, and he didn't think he was going to be able to get on. So I emailed Mr. Jesse Hoxett and said, looks like it's just going to be the two of us. And about probably 10 minutes ago, I sent him a message saying that I'm trying to log on, just hold on. And he said, not a problem. And now I just got a message from him that he's having some family issues at the moment that he needs to deal with. So I'm not sure if he's going to make it back or not. So it looks like it's just going to be Miss E. So So those of you who have listened to our program before may be familiar with the passion that I have about this topic of adoption, and especially older child adoption through the foster care system. I, in my work, have primarily dealt with children who have been adopted as older children. And when I say older children, I mean school-age children and older. However, in the general adoption community, I understand that older means a child that's even over a few months, because many people are going into the adoption process wanting to adopt infants and younger children. And with all of the research that has been done around the issues of early stages of development and emotional and physical trauma, we know that a lot of the children, even at the age of so many months, may also be experiencing some of the post-traumatic stress from that. And our guest tonight was going to talk about, and the other thing that I wanted to talk about was this whole new term, rehoming. And I have a lot to say about that. However, and I felt that the two adoptees that we were going to be speaking with tonight had very similar situations, however, the outcome was different. And I believe that the difference in outcome had very much to do with, one, the perseverance and the skills and knowledge of the adoptive parent. And for my own, I believe it also had a lot to do with faith and purpose and believing that all things work together for good, and knowing that the children who were placed in my life were not placed there just for something to do. It was there with a purpose. And one of the statements that I always make about life in general, when we talk about caring for others and meeting each other's needs, and whether it's as a therapist or a caregiver, a parent, a teacher, that if we're following our heart, we have to heal it first. And the title of my memoir is It's Heart Work, Being the Village That Raises a Child. And, you know, sort of a playoff on the word heart, H-A-R-D, meaning difficult, and heart, meaning it takes heart. It causes a lot of emotion of the heart. And some of those are high, some of those are low, somewhere in between. But it also means coming to know and understand the heart of the children, the hearts of the children that we're working with. So that is what I really, really wanted to stress in this program tonight, is that in addition to the desire to parent and to love, to understand why we're doing it. A lot of people say, you know, well, I want a child, I want someone to love, I want someone to love me back. And as human beings, that is something that we all want. However, sometimes the people that are placed in our lives, the little people and the bigger people, are not in a position at the moment to be able to give us that immediate gratification that we seek. And even though it is a human process, it's important to understand how and where we are getting those needs met. We can't depend on any one person or any one source to meet those emotional needs. And the other thing is that we need to have a very good, I want to share more of my story, but I'm really determined that I'm going to get on studio site so that I can see if there are callers on and how to bring other people in. So just be patient with me. And at the moment, while I'm doing this, I want you just to take a moment to think about what your life was like, say, between the ages of 5 and 10 years of age. Who were you living with? Who was the safe person in your life? What were the things that you enjoyed doing? what were the foods you liked to eat? What are the places you liked to go? Just think about that for a moment. Now, think about what would it have been like had you been uprooted from that or that home or that community, that city, even that state, and what that might have felt like if someone told you, well, you know, life hasn't been that great and things are changing, so we're going to make some changes in your life. And we're going to give you a new family. Everything was different. So just holding on to that for a few moments. And guess what? I am in the studio. It says I'm on air. And I have 1 hour, 16 minutes, and 48 seconds left. So I haven't gotten in the chat room just yet, but I will. And I will share with you a little bit about my story, both personally and professionally. We're going to have this. And just like I am doing this now and putting some things and some people on hold and taking my time, trying to find the humor in it, yet persevering, this is a lot of what it takes to turn a potentially horrifying situation into a gratifying situation. Not a fairy tale, per se, but a story, nevertheless. So, my story, It's Hard Work Being the Village That Raises a Child, actually began many years before I actually began to do the work in the village and to bring the village home. Even as a young child, I, as an only child, knew that one day I would adopt. And interestingly enough, when I talked to other adoptive parents, many seemed to have had that notion as a child that they were going to adopt. And for me, it wasn't the only means that I was going to have for having a larger family. I planned to do both. And as life's journey would bring me about, one of the first jobs I got out of undergraduate school was working for Children's Home Society, which I believe is the oldest adoption agency in the state of California. And things went on from there. And I ended up working in another county for a county agency, working in the adoptions unit. And that is where my heart really began to grow in understanding what was going on in the hearts of the children. I think a lot of times when we talk about adoption or we hear adoption, it's mostly coming from the adult perspective. And that's why I really strive to have the young people who have lived this journey to be able to give their voices to their experiences, because no one can really truly understand unless they've been through it and been very close to someone who has been through it. But I saw the grief process that children went through and going from sometimes from their biological parents to the foster home, to another foster home, sometimes a group home, and being somewhat hesitant but wanting to be excited about having a permanent family. And the social workers and the supervisors would get all excited. You know, we have a family for this child. and, you know, celebrate, and place the child, do some pre-placement visits, have them to know one another a bit and do some things, and then say, okay, you're parent and child, that's it. Then wait a few months to be able to go to court to finalize it. And unfortunately, there are some who never made it to court because the placement was disrupted, meaning that they decided it was not a good match. And next, we'll move on. So there, the child went to another foster home. The family probably seeing another child. And as I watched this process, it grieved my heart because I was really focused on the children. It's like, okay, this is in many ways like another form of rejection. People wanted to label the children and say all the different things that were workable and being labeled unadoptable. And that just was not acceptable to me, that there was a child that was not adoptable. As a result, in my caseload, which I had of children all over the age of 6 and some sibling groups all the way up to 18, my final statement to leave there, if the last thing I did was to have a child that I was told unadoptable to be adopted, and it did happen. So shortly after I left that agency, I received a phone call one day from one of my former coworkers there at the agency, and she tells me, you know, we were in a staff meeting and we thought about you, and we decided that there's this little boy that needs a home, and we wanted to send you his information. We think you'd be a great match for him. And as a matter of fact, he looks like you. And I, you know, kind of laugh. Now, they know I love children, but I had not done a home study, had not talked about being doing my career and, you know, doing all of these things. Even though I wanted to have a family at that time, it wasn't going to happen by biological means. And they said, well, he looks like you. And I jokingly said, since I had been the only African-American staff person there, I said, sure he does. He's a little black boy. I'm a black woman. Yeah, he looks like me. And made a joke about it. And some of you may have heard the story, and you may also have an opportunity to read it in the book. But several weeks passed, and they sent me the packet, and I opened the packet, and my goodness, I opened the envelope, and out fell this picture of this little boy who looked just like me in second grade, blew me away. And I must add, he was a cutie pie. And if you are watching this online, you will see probably one of the pictures that we took on the first day, well, on the day that we actually finalized our adoption, which is probably about 6 months to a year after he came to live with me. And I was in love. We met, spent some time together, spent some weekends together, and things were going okay. However, after our brief honeymoon of 1 month, I think he came to me the week, and I never will forget the very first fallout we had was actually on Martin Luther King's birthday. And I remember crying and said, oh, Lord, this is not the dream that I had hoped for. And it caused me some concern because there was a situation in which I reprimanded him for something, and I saw the hurt and the anger that came over him. It was just like, woof. And one of the comments that he stated to me on that day, and I don't even know if he remembers this, he stated that, you don't love me. You're just like all the other foster parents. You're just doing it for the money. And I was like, what? and it hurt so bad. And mind you, I wasn't a therapist yet at the time. I was sort of somewhere in between my degree and being licensed and rather doing work. I had done social work. So I hadn't really done all of my own personal work. But I had enough insight to realize that it wasn't totally about me. And the reality is, now that I look at it, it was very little about me and about more about his level of trust and his frustration and his anger over everything that had gone on in his life that we expect to bring children into our lives and to live this fairy tale existence like nothing ever happened in the past. We don't want them to talk about it. We don't want to hear about it because, one, we don't feel that we have the ability to make any changes, to do anything different. All we figure, we can't change the past, so we're going to change their future. And most people realize that in order to move forward, you have to do some healing of the past. Some people are great about putting the children in therapy, but how many are willing to go themselves? So we did lots of therapy, but I found out that some of the therapists, very, very little insight as to what makes up the dynamics of an adoptive family. And found myself being blamed or at the most questioned as to what was I doing to cause this child to have some of the difficulties he was having. And just as cute as a button, a smile that could just, you know, knock anyone off their feet knew, oh, no, he could not be doing all these things that this lady is saying. You know, as I stated in the book, he was one, he would rip you off, and the child that came after him, he would tell you off. So you didn't know what you were doing. I called him the dynamic duo. And it's taken a lot of prayer, hope, tears, and just faith in knowing that there was a purpose for all of that. And rather than going into the whole details of the story, I would much prefer that you read the book, which is It's Hard Work, Being the Village, the Reasons of Child. And you can find that at www.hearttalkpublications.com. You can also find it on my personal website, which is www.talktomse.com. And I would like for you just to be able to follow along some of the journey. And it was definitely a journey, an emotional roller coaster. But what kept me in, I would still say, is I knew there was a purpose. Many have heard me share my initial knowledge of Les Brown. And one of the things that just grabbed my heart in hearing him speak to Brown's baby boy is that when she went through difficulties with him and his twin brother, people told her, take those boys back down to the welfare department. And my statement in response to that is, could you imagine anyone even twisting their lips to say that about their biological child? What makes them think they could do that with any other child, which is still my child, nevertheless? Biological child has issues. We don't just totally throw them away, at least for people who are, I would say, committed and have a reasonable state of health, physical, emotional, and mental health. So that just did not make sense to me. But one of the things that I stated is, like, you know, how you liking now? You know, the ha-ha is on them. And I always said, I want to be a Ms. Mamie Brown. And that stuck with me throughout the years. It's like, you know, this too shall pass. They're not going to be this age always. Did fear come up? Yes. Did I worry that maybe the behaviors wouldn't change and they might do something that would cause detriment to themselves? Yes. But the bottom line is I kept the faith. And even today, they're 30 and 34 years of age, but there are still moments when there is concern as to their well-being. Isn't that with any parent? So we continue. And today, I would say, everything hasn't been rosy. Not everything has gone the way that I thought or expected that it would. But do they still have a mom? Yes, they do. And to me, that's the most important thing. So when we come to deal with this issue of rehoming, I felt that it's just, you know, one of those cute, politically correct ways to get them out of my house, but I'm kind enough to find another home for them. Like, So I have heard it go around. I haven't really had the instinct to really look upon it more because it just creates, for me, just another failure of someone to hang in there, a failure to understand, and a failure of a community and a village to help. So in preparing for this program, I decided I would little reading on rehoming because my take is that when it became a real big issue a couple of years ago when the mother who had adopted a child from Russia and placed him on an airplane and sent him back, the world was in an uproar. And, yes, I felt that for the child, as well as for the mom, really, but I could not imagine putting a child in a plane and sending him into a whole other country after, you know, he's been with me for this long. But one of the things that kept coming to my mind is our children here in the United States go through this every single day in the foster and pre-adoptive placement and foster adopt placement. They may not be placed in a plane, but their clothes are put generally in a black plastic garbage bag, put in a county car, and shipped off to God knows where. And it's like, wow, are we serious? Are we serious? So as I was reading, and one of the things I was going to ask Attorney Hughes this evening, is the term rehoming specific to international adoption? Because most places where I saw it come up had to do with children who had been placed here in the United States from another country, and then the adoptive parents just placed them in another home with someone without any intervention or any assessment of neither the child nor the family. And I can't really say if it's a whole lot better having agency intervention. People may not like the fact that I'm saying that because I know that there are many homes that have been and craziness has happened in those homes just as well. And I think when we talk about rehoming, again, not justifying it, but I think of biological families who sometimes say, you know, I'm needing help, and they won't have an extended family member to raise the child or, you know, someone that's close to the family, and they just keep moving. So I just realized, okay, looks like we're off the air, but we're back, that perhaps that could be the meaning in the intent for the adoptive parent who is having difficulty, but it just, it's not okay to me. I went through actually a very grueling process of two young ladies being removed from their adoptive home. It's been about a year and a half ago. And for me, everything is a process. And when everything is just taking and it's happened abruptly, guarding their whole life in one day and just having to uproot, to me, that's just inhuman. And my thing is, how do we, more than anything, we're talking about rehoming, how do we rehumanize? How do we maintain a sense of humanization for our children and not treat them like cargo? Yes, we as adults, we have feelings too. But we also have a responsibility to our children. We have a responsibility to the responsibilities that we've taken on as to get help. And I think probably the biggest thing, just like many people who take their own lives, feeling helpless and hopeless and there not being any help. And I can understand that sense of helplessness. I've had it myself. But I refuse to give up. So what we're looking at is a bigger picture of where's the village. And anyone who knows me, that's my greatest, my greatest concept is, how do we be a village? And I realize that many people's lives are so isolated, they really don't feel that they have a place where they can go for help. And there could be many reasons. It could be living in a geographically different area from the people they know. It could be not knowing what help is really needed and what to ask for and who to ask. It could be a degree of pride, and some of it could just be just outright selfish discomfort and refusal to go through anymore. And I know that that will rattle some nerves, but it's the truth. There is, I read something this week that says, in order comfort, and in order to relieve discomfort, we've got to move forward. And I said to myself, wow, that is so on target. So there's nothing in life that's going to be perfect. And one of the posts that I read on Facebook this week was saying, you know, well, what do you mean, why would a child, you know, if a child was adopted and still has a relationship with their adoptive parents, doesn't everyone? And the answer is no, not even all biological children have relationships with their parents. And a lot of people look at it as adoption, and I view it, at least from the positive perspective, the permanent perspective, as marriage. You make a commitment, it's to death do us part, unless someone is threatening. And life-threatening doesn't even necessarily mean physical death, but for you, yourself, your persona, who you are, is dying. And again, that's about trying to get oxygen, trying to breathe life. So the person who takes on those vows and stands before the court of law and before God and says, I vow to take care of this person for the rest of my life, and may not have wanted to, but didn't feel like they had what it took. So I believe it's important that we each take real clear inventory of ourselves, asking ourselves, why do we want to do this, and what are our expectations? And if our expectations are not met, can we see ourselves moving forward? And I always ask, what's the worst thing that you could see happening? What's the worst thing that you feel that you could endure? And basically a deal breaker for you. And even though I don't think people ask themselves that while they're carrying the child, some may, because now we're having this whole new designer baby technology. But it's about being willing to adapt and having balance. And I know I'm making this probably sound like, oh, it's just that easy. No, it's not that easy, but it's about following through. And I am looking forward to the day that my son and I can tell our stories together to bridge them in, because as is said, of any situation, there's always more than one side to the story. And it doesn't mean that the sides have to be oppositional. They can be very parallel and both very true. However, it's how you integrate them. So in my looking at this whole issue of permanence, commitment, but not rehoming, to avoid that, some of the work starts with us and receiving help and getting help. And that's one of the things that Jesse is doing now. He's, having been that child, he's committed his life to making a difference in the lives of family as well as children to keep them connected. And one of the things about his story that I just found so admirable, to meet his dad, his adoptive dad, and it was just amazing, because what people tend to think is out of sight, out of mind. But if you have a child that does require out-of-home care or temporary placement in some type of treatment facility or other, it's still important to keep those heart ties. And maybe you're at a place where you're totally frustrated and you're angry and you're disappointed and you feel like your whole life is falling apart and you really want nothing else to do. Heal your heart and follow it. If you're feeling like that, imagine what the child is feeling. If we've been on the earth for these many more years than that young child, even though he or she may no longer be a small child, imagine what's going on inside of their hearts. So the first thing is to really to be able to acknowledge our feelings without it being hurtful or to the child, and find a place where we can begin to heal and to move forward to bringing forgiveness on both sides to the child. And even if the child is not under your roof, maintain that heart connection. One of the statements that I love is one of the first statements I ever saw about adoption. It said, not flesh of my flesh, neither bone of my bone, but still miraculous of my own. Never think for 1 minute that because you grew under my heart, though not in it. I know I kind of messed that up, but you get the gist of it. And I love that, because I believe that my children have been in my heart from day one. And there's no way they could get out. Even when I was upset, angry, afraid, you know, wondering why things are not going this way, what did I do to deserve this? And I realized it really wasn't totally about me. But then, again, it was, because I came to the conclusion for years, people always ask me, you know, why are you so passionate about this? Why do you love working, you know, with children? Why would you bring children home? Why would you adopt? You know, and my line was, oh, it's my calling. It's just something I've always wanted to do. Well, I realized recently while preparing a message to speak called Following Your Heart Could Lead to Your Destiny and Purpose, and realize, and following my heart is what brought me here, but it wasn't necessarily that great, caring love and altruistic thinking that got me there, it really came from a place of soothing my own heart and being, as a child, wanting that family. But in pursuing that, it brought me up on discovering the hearts of others. So just a little bit from following your heart for you. But before we end this evening, I could not leave giving you some of my heart factors in being the family and being the village. And I always use the acrostic heart. And the H stands for hold a vision. Hold a vision of what you desire and what you see for this child that he or she can be. And that's why I believe in vision boards. Create the vision. And even when it seems like they're at the worst place, still continue to hold a vision of that child being someplace, somewhere different and more positive than what you see them now. The scripture says, you know, as a man thinketh, so is he. And I believe that we also know that without a vision, the people perish. And I continue to hold a vision for my son capable of doing. And I'm starting to see some of that unfold. The other part of H being a doubleheader is humor. You've got to have a sense of humor. When we take everything too seriously, we'll be depressed and we'll be the ones in out-of-home care. It's how to hold on to our sanity. Many times just having to look at a situation and laugh and shake your head and, you know, maybe see sort of the exaggerated caricature of that. And someone told me when they read my book, they literally laughed and cried and that I should have passed it out with a box of Kleenex. And I don't consider myself, you know, a comic. However, I do think I have some strange kind of ways of viewing things sometimes. And even as my youngest son said, I would ask him, I said, where do you get this stuff from? He said, my hair. And the other part of having the humor is to realize it's not all horrible. There's sometimes when it seems that the bad outweighs the good, but we also have to look for the good. And I have, as many wonderful stories as I do not good. It's just that the not good ones ran deep and long. But there is still another side. The E to be different. Expect the trail to curve every now and then. Don't expect perfection. Expect that life is going to be what it is, life. A journey, sometimes a roller coaster, but expect that this too shall pass. And I know sometimes it feels like this is not going to ever end. And there's the fear sometimes that when it ends, it's going to end on a low note. But I keep my positive affirmation. I read positive story programs and my television programs. I share the success stories of people who have been, as some would say, to hell and back, because I want to give people not a false hope, but a hope that there is a brighter day ahead. And again, it may not necessarily be the way that we see it, but things have a way of coming out sometimes, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I never expected it to come out like this. So just keep expecting something to shift. And in the meantime, do the positive things. Do things that bring you some joy. You know, as Ayala Venzette said in her book, in the meantime, you know, that We can't jump 10, 20 years ahead. But in the meantime, we can still hold a vision and do some of the simple and basic things that bring us a sense of joy and relief. The A is to acknowledge where you are. And just because on all the negative, but there's a time we need to acknowledge and accept that things are not quite where they are, but also ask, what is it that I can gain from this situation? How can I allow this to make me a different, a better person? How am I going to be able to use this experience to have an impact on the world? Little did I know when I was going through all of that I was going through that I would be doing what I'm doing today. And even though I started the nonprofit organization for a child cart to provide counseling and post-placement support services to families to keep children from having to bounce from home to decrease the disruption rate, there are times I told people, little did I know that I would need the services myself more than anyone else. But then it was ironic how sometimes I would be sitting with a parent and they said, you just seem to understand, you know, how do you understand how I feel so well? And I used to jokingly say, oh, just read it in the book. And today there is a book, and I hope that people will really take heart and look at other people's testimonies, how they got through, and just knowing the fact that they did and that they have. There are plenty of stories. If you're around people who want to tell you the most horrid stories, and I know with the news and with the media now just being plastered everywhere, sometimes it's hard to take in any good news or hope because we're so bombarded with all the negativity and all the hopelessness and all of the killings and just the madness. And speaking of which, you know, at one point when my son was on the run for months on end and none of us knew where he was, I remember getting a letter from the sheriff's department asking me to sign a release for his dental chart in the event that a body was found and they needed to do, you know, a comparison. Can you imagine getting that and someone saying here? It's almost, they just might as well say, you know, well, come on down to the morgue and hang out, you know, probably bring people in, and one of them might be your son. I think that was probably one of the lowest points of my adoptive parent experience. But I refused. I refused. I signed the paper and sent it back, and I just remember having this thud in my chest, like, oh, my goodness, you know, no, no, no. And I refused. And I started having the conversation with him about signing these papers and telling him that if he did it again, I was going to take his teeth out. Needless to say, he's here. He's 34 years old and has his honest teeth and still has that gorgeous, gorgeous smile. So I can laugh now, but it wasn't really funny at the moment. And but we made it through. And in the meantime, the other thing is just being able to work with people and continuously sometimes, you know, when we don't have enough ourselves, go to some place and someone who understands and really get some uplifting. Don't listen to the negativity. Don't listen to the negativity. If people want to tell you all the horrible things and said, you know you mean well, perhaps, but I'm choosing not to listen to that right now. I refuse to let that settle into the recesses of my mind and into my heart, into my spirit. I'm just not. And sometimes people would say things, and I would look and say, and you're telling me this because, and just leave it. Because sometimes people are just talking, and they just don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. and someone who understands and knows to be able to give you that uplifting. So surround yourself with people. And in this day and age, you know, back at that time, you know, there wasn't the internet, there wasn't Facebook, there weren't support groups available through webinars, et cetera. There are many resources to reach out and find a sense of connectedness around the issue. And perhaps I believe that they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And whether you believe it or not, even when we take on parenting, we are becoming students of yet another matter. And I believe when we are open to learning how we can do things rather than saying, I tried everything and it just didn't work, I believe that the answers come. I know for a personal fact that that is indicative of what's happened in my life. In each step, God has placed people, circumstances, resources in my life just to get me to do the next step, to the next step. Sometimes I couldn't carry myself, but he kept bringing people. And then other times I'd sprint across and be fine, and then I'd fall on my face and saying, you know, I can't do this anymore. But, thank God. The R is, in addition to asking for help and acknowledging where we are, is to reach out to others, child, whether you disagree with them or not. And I'm not saying that the behaviors are to be condoned, so respect their emotions. Don't take it personally if they ever say, you know, I wish I'd never been adopted. Try to, you know, reflect on that and think, what is that all about? What does that mean? And I've shared this story where in a therapy session my son said he wished he had never been adopted. And the therapist, I thought I was going to have to resuscitate her. She looked at me like she expected me to pass out. And I wasn't hurt by that. And I think because having had some skills and some work as in mental health and children's services, I understood that there were a whole series of events that had happened before my son had come to me. And there was a time and place in his life where he felt safe. He wanted to go back to that safe place. He wanted to go back to his grandma where he had been. And unfortunately, she had come to a place where she wasn't able to take care of him anymore. That's why I heard him saying, basically he was saying, I miss my grandma. And it came out, I wish I'd never been adopted. Now, how could I not respect those emotions? So really think and reflect on what is being said before we react. And the T is always trust the process and just know that it's happened and it's happening for a reason. And sometimes we are hard-pressed to find out why in the world and how in the world, could something like this be for a reason? To what purpose? And I would just say, trust the process, trust God. So there you have it, the heart solution for sort of rehoming to me is reharding. I like that. I'm going to create my own term now. We're going to reheart, reconnect with those that we love. And one of the questions I asked in our announcement was, if home is where the heart is, what happens to the heart when you get rehomed? Things that make you say, So if you're listening to this, perhaps you can drop me a line on Facebook or via email at ms.e@forachildsheart.org. You can drop us a note on For a Child's Heart, Inc. Facebook. You can drop a note at Ms. Evelyn, M-S-E-V-E-L-Y-N, The Heart Lady Speaks on Facebook. And hopefully you'll have some feedback and some insight, and we can revisit this conversation. So during the month of National Adoption Awareness Month, I know National Adoption Day is a couple of days. So I want to say congratulations to all the families who have embraced their children in their hearts and are going to be finalizing their adoptions this week. I want to encourage those who have embraced their children and might be having some difficult times at the moment, but just keep heart. Keep heart. Take heart and keep heart. And for those of you who are adoptees and have had both positive and negative experiences, I just want to encourage you to reheart yourself, reconnect with your heart, find that place of healing and forgiveness, and allow your story to be one, share with someone the things that would have helped you as a child growing up that someone may not have had the knowledge and the heart to do. You are now a teacher. So it's time for us to make a great impact on the world. Make an impact on the world. And for those of you who are considering adoption, I would say follow your heart, feel it, and connect with those who are like-minded and like-hearted. So I thank you for this time, and despite every obstacle, I just want you to know what happened this evening. Had technical difficulty getting online, had technical difficulty speaking, had technical difficulty getting into the computer studio, lost all three items that I had lined up for tonight, but nevertheless, you just keep heart. And sometimes you have to go the journey alone. But that doesn't make it any less of a journey. It doesn't make it any less impactful. It doesn't make it any less important. So if you're listening to this, I would love to have your feedback and encourage you to not only take heart, but to do something special for a child's heart as well as mine. Take care. God bless. Have an awesome remainder of the month celebrating adoption and giving thanks for our children. God bless.